Hey guys, today's show is sponsored by Howl.fm, which has a new show that's perfect for fans of Stranger Things and Black Mirror. It's called The Outer Reach, and it's an anthology series inspired by mid-century sci-fi. It stars Martin Starr, Echo Kellum, and Aparna Nancharla. To listen to The Outer Reach and over 200 hours of exclusive Howl miniseries, as well as a bunch of really great stand-up specials and the entire Cracked archive, can now be found there, and only there, I think. You can get a full year of Howl for just $34.99. All you have to do is go to howl.fm/CRACKED to get started.
I hope with the highest of hopes that I never have to go back to the trap, and my days are dealing with dope. So I only spit fire and dope. So later on, you can go quote my lines to your people and folk, and they say, dang. That boy be spitting that pressure, and he be smoking that pressure, and he's smart as a professor. Yes, sir.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're listening to Down, which is the first song off of Run the Jewels 3. Sort of a subdued, but eventually just ass-kicking way that they kick things off, and that we're kicking things off. I love the second half of LP's verse on this, starting with the part where he says, yeah, better hope that. We'll listen to that part of the song heading into the episode, but it's appropriate because that verse ends with him and Mike getting their bloody noggins lopped off, and the chorus talks about almost dying, and this episode is drenched in death, you guys. We have the hilarious hosts of My Favorite Murder, Georgia Hardstark and Karen Kilgariff, and I'm taking them through a bunch of murders that we've written about since they were last on. And since this is one of those fairly straightforward subjects you don't need to hear me speak in broad generalities about, I'm going to just take you through a couple stories I didn't have time to get to. So yeah, let's start things off with Ahmad Siraji, who also went by his alias Datuk. Datuk is on fire. No, seriously, he's in hell for the story I'm about to tell. So Datuk, a humble cattle breeder in the Philippines, until his dead father appeared to him in a dream one night, very Shakespearean, and instructed him to murder 70 women. So less Shakespearean, but let's see where he's going with this. So he tells him to murder 70 women and drink their saliva. So yeah, not Shakespeare. I guess maybe we're talking about Titus Andronicus. So anyways, rather than waking up and being like, man, I better not tell anyone about that dream because that was a weird one and fucking everyone would think I was crazy if they found out, he was like, man, I better not tell anyone about that dream because I'm going to murder 70 women and drink their saliva. And that will be significantly harder to do if they know about my dreams. So in addition to being the local cattle breeder, he was also a shaman. So people already came to him with questions about their life. And when women between the ages of 14 and I think 40 would come to him, he always seemed to have the same answer. He'd tell him, all right, come to this sugarcane field with me. I'm going to bury you waist deep in the earth and then give you a little neck rub. And the answer will be clear. And then he strangled them and then drank the saliva out of their gaping mouths. And then he would rebury their bodies in a sugarcane field with their heads pointing right at his house. So yeah, after he had been doing this for years, they eventually found a bunch of bodies. And after doing some very careful police work, they figured out whose shack they were all looking at and brought his nightmare streak to an end at 42, barely halfway to 70. His dad must have been so ashamed of him. So that's the story of Ahmad Siraji. Let's do one more. Let's do Jane Toppin, born 1857, died 1938. Crazy as fuck everywhere in between, which is somewhat understandable, actually, when you learn that her mom died when she was like just old enough to start storing memories, at which point her dad dropped her off at the Boston Female Asylum, which doesn't sound like the most inviting place, and then her dad went home and sewed his own eyelids shut. So her first memories are like an acid trip being had inside the fictional universe of the video from The Ring. Now, at first, it seemed like she was going to be one of those underdog stories they make movies about, because she did become like a brilliant student and then just the most beloved nurse in all of Boston. They called her Jolly Jane because people in history didn't try very hard when it came to nicknames. If her patients had to come up with one complaint about good old Jolly Jane, it would probably be that they all died whenever she took care of them. So yeah, it turned out Jolly Jane was poisoning her patients, and unfortunately she didn't let them go quickly. She'd administer alternating doses of the most potent downer and upper medications that had been invented to that point, morphine and atropine, or atropine. I don't know. I don't do this stuff. Say no to drugs, people. She'd get them as close to death as possible via the morphine and then like yank them right back to life with the atropine. And then she'd get in bed with them, real creepy, and hold them and stroke their hair as she shot them up with the lethal dose of morphine. She poisoned her more popular foster sister, Elizabeth Brigham, too. When she was 42, she invited Elizabeth to a picnic on the beach and poisoned her with strychnine. And then, as she recounted later, she clutched her sister lovingly and watched with delight as she gasped her life out. So, pretty cool chick. After that, she lived on Cape Cod in a house owned by the Davises, the Davis family. And at a certain point, she was just like, I don't give a fuck. And so she stopped paying rent. And Mrs. Davis went to get the rent in person. And to everyone's surprise, except yours, hopefully, Mrs. Davis got sick and died, which seemed a little suspicious at first. And then suddenly all the other members of her family got sick and died, which seemed a lot suspicious. So they eventually figured out that it was Jolly Jane. She confessed to 33 murders and blamed it on the fact that she didn't have a husband or family to keep her busy. All right, that's enough for my murder stories. Let's get right into my murder stories. I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you guys then. Yeah, they better hope that I'm a full force and a cold fast. See the cold floor where I lick dirt when the dough dried and the pride died. Had a dumb max, had a shop right. Give me cool meals and the lights on. I'm a do right, get a new crew, make a new life. Never boo-hoo, never lose sight. I'm a hoodoo with a burst heart from my old soul. But a stop drop with a squad top, we don't stop a lot. We don't talk a lot about it. We just pop it off a lot. I'm high, man. I'm a cosmonaut. Scream fuck up till I lop my bloody noggins off. I promise y'all.
What up? How's it going, UCB? My name is Jack. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked. This is Daniel, the head of video at Cracked. Both O'Brien. We are the O's, Brian. And joining us today, the hosts of one of my favorite podcasts, Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark of My Favorite Murder!
Hi, everybody.
Hey, welcome, guys. You guys.
We'll so see you later.
Few of you have heard the show, it seems like, maybe. Yeah, so since the last time we talked, you guys have become the biggest podcast ever in the history of anything.
Thanks to you guys.
Yeah, you made us, Jack. You made us.
I know, yeah. That's what I was getting at.
So you guys were on the podcast before, and after that, murders didn't stop.
It was our stated goal.
I thought that was the intention.
But. We did our best.
So, we on our site, for people who don't know, I'm assuming there's quite a few of you, we sometimes talk about murders, actually pretty frequently. We publish a lot of content, and I haven't talked to you guys in a year, so I wanted to catch you up on some of the murders that I've been dying to tell you about that are super creepy, and Dan has a hometown murder that he wants to talk about.
Good.
What a weird thing to applaud. I could jump into some murders if you want.
Yeah. You want to talk some murders, Dan?
I'm not sure if you guys have covered this, but there was a fellow from Monmouth County, New Jersey. There's actually two from my home county of Monmouth County, New Jersey, that were serial killers roughly at the exact same time. And one of them, Richard Biegenwald, otherwise known as the Thrill Killer. He was a really strange case. It's one of those like tragic cases where he had like an abusive and an alcoholic father. So this is you see it as a kid who like almost never had a chance because childhood was so rough for him. At 5, he tried to burn his house down. Mm. At 11, he set fire to himself and was just like pushed around from this is a school for bad boys and this is another school for bad boys and we're trying everything. He did his first murder in Bayonne, New Jersey in 1958. And got life in prison, but was released in 17 years for good behavior. And then he murdered 8 more people.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Yep.
And it's such a strange, it's very strange and bizarre to me because there's no rhyme or reason to it. Not that I want, like, to understand.
Theme?
Like, yeah, I don't need a theme or anything like that. I like a theme to know who needs to look out, I guess.
It's sure.
Like, this person is targeting 19-year-olds who like Chuck E. Cheese, so don't be that. And you'll be fine.
Yeah.
He was just there. There was no rhyme or reason to it. He was just shooting people and like burying and hiding their bodies. And it ran the spectrum of age and gender. And there was never like sexual assault involved. It was just a guy who liked doing this and seemed to think he was good at it. And the reason he got caught is because he kept like bringing people to his house and like, look at those bones. It's a person I killed.
Oh. That's a bad strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say.
Do you find that usually doesn't work out well?
I wouldn't do it, is what I'm saying.
I feel like so many of these guys, though, like you see maybe a quarter of them that want to be caught. Like there was a guy in Michigan who turned himself in and was like, please arrest me and make me stop doing this. I'm going to keep doing it. They don't want to do it, and they're just driven to. And then you think about that guy, and you're like, I don't know why he did it. And then you think about his day-to-day and like, those boys' homes where he probably got beaten by the... Because, like, in the 50s, they were like, beat the terrible out of him, you know, and, like, molest the terrible out of him.
He had electroshock therapy. I don't want to put an immediate link between electroshock therapy and serial killers, but that was, like, another one of the things when you're between the ages of 2 and 13 and you're getting beaten and abused by alcoholic parents and then electrocuted. It's like, all right, well, maybe I'm going to murder someone and show their bones to my friend. I don't.
But it's not even alcoholic parents. It's like parents. Like
yes.
They were all like that. I feel like back then.
That's
<everyone's>,
right. Yeah, that, like, they. It wasn't considered alcoholism back then. It was just like, oh, that's how they spend their evenings.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And also, it's very disturbing that he, at such a young age, had a fire problem because fire, as we all know, usually indicates molestation of some kind or some. You know, it's.
We all know that. That's amazing. Well, that is an amazing insight.
We all know it.
Oh, sorry. I missed that episode. Shit.
What is it like killing pets, wetting your bed,
serial killer shit,
and
right?
And fires
and arson? Yes.
Arson. There
yeah.
We go.
It's the trifecta that they may have disproven it now because we're in an age where everything gets disproven constantly. But that was like the trifecta of like this is basically I think it's the argument that some serial killers can be made, that it's like if they had a different upbringing, it may not have happened this way, which is especially because if that guy was just picking people off randomly, then it's that idea of like he wants to destroy and hurt in the same way he's been hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm on his side.
No. The other one also from Monmouth County, this person actually killed someone that went to the same high school as me and my family. Not at the time. This is and my
I got real
friend,
excited
still.
Amy brought this to my attention because her mom went to high school with one of the victims who was just linked to this serial killer in 2016. So this is a guy who was Robert Zerinsky, lived 1940 to 2008, and started murdering people in like 1965. And this guy did have a theme. This was 15 to 19-year-old women that he would murder and just get rid of somewhere. There was a weird thing that I don't know if there's a precedent for this, but the murder of Rosemary Calandriello, that's probably wrong.
No, perfect pronunciation.
You just gotta go for it.
In 1969, he was convicted of that murder. We've still never found a body at all. She just went missing, and eventually, like, he has come out and said, I buried her in Neptune. And she's also said, that was wrong, I threw her in the Atlantic Ocean.
Dude.
So we'll never find this body, but we definitely know that he murdered her, and he's a thing that my parents knew about, and like just emailing, hey, there was a, do you know anything about a Monmouth County serial killer? And they were just like, oh yeah, we were all pretty scared because my mom was a high school student around this time. Just like, yeah, high school women in this area started disappearing, so we were all pretty freaked out by that.
What was he doing in that county? Like, did he live there? And he was just
he lived there, yeah. I mean, like, Monmouth County is a great place.
Clearly.
It's truly a tremendous place to raise kids. We got rid of the two serial killers, so don't even worry about that.
But who's left over? That's right. What we need to know.
What's crazy to me about that is the clandestine grave situation is like so out of control. The amount of places you can hide bodies and then the amount of bodies that have been found and are not being linked up to missing persons. There are right. So many of them. It's so
and
shitty.
It seems so for the family, so frustrating and so tragic that either there will never be a body or there will never be a killer.
Or they won't be prosecuted because there's no body and you only get one chance to try them. And if you only have circumstantial evidence and you don't have a body that shows how they got murdered, you can't prove that the person you're prosecuting is the killer unless you have fucking strong witnesses and all this other stuff.
I think you're going to go to the Supreme Court with this double jeopardy shit. You like really seem to have it out for double jeopardy. I love it.
Fuck it.
I'm going to sit home on that one and just be like, good luck, Georgia.
Thank you.
By no means am I trying to make this a theory that sticks, but these two serial killers in this area, born 1940, died 2008, both of them, exact same years of birth.
Are they left-handed?
Jack is left-handed. So be real cool about where this goes.
Is that one of the trifecta?
I don't know.
Well, that's, you know, one of the first things we discovered when we started this podcast, there were two, if not three, freeway killers in Los Angeles in the 70s. Like, when you start looking into stuff like this, like, oh, these are interesting cases or these, but then you start seeing this kind of like, this is a thing that happens a lot. It might be happening less now, hopefully, because of DNA and stuff, but it's especially back then, you uncover that stuff and it's like, oh yeah, there was like several serial killers in action at one time.
And you hear about the famous ones, but you don't hear about the ones that are killing disenfranchised people because nobody gives a shit. So when you look into it and there's three fucking freeway killers and you didn't know about it.
Yeah.
I think we might have talked about this the first time you guys were on, but like I feel like maybe 5 to 10% of murders got solved before 1970, and like then it was like accidentally they were just like, oh shit, we got that right, because like they were just using eyewitness testimony and like that was the best it got. Otherwise it was just shoe size and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like if the person left a footprint, then we'd check their closet for those shoes.
It was pretty rudimentary for a long time. Also, there was, I can't remember what I was watching recently. Oh, it was a really good, it's a Netflix series, but it was just one of those things where it's like, especially if it's a small town and the police force hasn't ever had to deal with a murder at all, much less like a serial killer or anything. So it's like people kind of walking into the area, like nothing's taped off or nothing, they don't know how to preserve scenes. It's just like all that stuff that people have like learned progressively over the years. I am an expert, by the way. I'm not sure if I told you I'm the police chief here in Los Angeles.
Well, you hear about stuff like that with like JonBenet Ramsey, and like they ruined the case because they trampled through, and you're like, well, that was like 90, whatever. And they're like, it's not like that anymore. And it's like, well, it's fucking like that anymore still.
Did you guys see the Amanda Knox documentary?
Yeah.
How infuriating was that investigator?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What a douche.
The guy who started out talking about how he always admired Sherlock Holmes, and then like halfway through he like starts smoking a pipe and you're like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? And like he had these theories that were so outlandish. The reason he was on to Amanda Knox was because the body was covered up, and he was like, and when a woman kills someone, they cover up the body, because it was like just complete garbage. But he was like, 10 years later, after it had been disproven, he was like on this documentary being like, I am really fucking smart.
Women love duvets. And so, therefore.
So there was a recent episode where, I think, Karen, you told the story of David Letterman's stalker, which was really engrossing, even though it wasn't a murder. So I wanted to talk about, first of all, any non-murder crime stories that you guys want to talk about, but I have one that might be murder. I went really high on that.
Jack, if you're sitting on information that could sway this murder in one direction or the other,
he's saving it for the show, and then he's going to go to the police.
Have you guys talked about the case of Jonathan Luna? Do you know?
Tell me. I don't know anyone's name.
No, probably not. We don't remember.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So he's a 38-year-old father of two, attorney in Baltimore. Really successful family man. Rags to riches story, by all accounts, the height of his professional and personal powers. And on December 3rd, 2003, left the courthouse where he worked at around 11:30. And the next morning, he was found drowned in a shallow creek with his court ID still around his neck in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, which I just Google Mapsed that backstage. And that's like 80-something miles away. And they ruled it a suicide. He had been stabbed like 30-something times.
Oh.
Often in the back. And
what?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who ruled it a suicide? Which child?
The Pennsylvania police.
It was a puggle that was like, what? A suicide.
And like the mortician was like, it was definitely not a suicide. It was like the worst murder I've ever seen. His hands were like shredded. He had all these cuts all over his body. There was blood in the back seat of his car. So like...
And there was a guy back there being like, suicide.
There was one cop who owed a favor to another cop, and he walked in on him, watching him stab this guy. The cop was like, looks like a suicide to me. How about you? All right, we're even now.
He got me a latte once. I owe him.
So, like, all this weird stuff started coming out. Like, he had dating profiles, even though he was supposedly this family man.
So he deserved it?
So they know that he, like, left work on his own accord and then, like, started driving all over the place and, like, making ATM withdrawals. Seemingly, he was, like, zigzagging all over the tri-state area. They know where he, like, paid tolls, and he, like, paid in, like, multiple ways with, like, cash, then Easy Pass, then credit card. And even though he was stabbed 36 times with his own penknife, by the way, which is why apparently that's all the cops heard. They're just like... Oh, yeah, it must have been a suicide. It was his penknife.
It was his.
What a bummer.
Whose knife was it? That was the only question they asked.
Yeah.
But his death was drowning, which is really weird because when you look at the stream he was in, it was like the smallest stream you've ever seen.
When you're fucking unconscious laying face down in a puddle because you've been stabbed 36 times, you're
going to
drown eventually.
Yeah, I guess I'll forgive him for that.
Is it cause of death or just the last thing that happened?
Right.
I mean, that's...
Right.
He got eaten by a coyote to death.
Yeah, really.
He left his cell phone and his glasses, which he needed to drive, so it doesn't really make sense at all that he committed suicide, but it also doesn't make sense as a murder. There's a gas station attendant who saw him like filling up his tank an hour before he supposedly got murdered by himself in his car, but like he wasn't bipolar or schizophrenic.
You put $11 in when you're going to kill yourself. You don't fill up your fucking gas.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What are you drawing money out of your bank for if you're going to kill yourself?
And the money was all left in his car, just scattered around.
Make
Jack, did you bring this to us for us to solve here today?
Yeah.
Because we can do it.
Let's do this. I think this is the right team.
We're staying here until we fucking solve this.
It's a lockdown.
Yeah. Try to get out of here, you guys.
Yeah, so anyway,
we had a couple of suspects for that murder, and they're all in this room right now.
It sounds to me like he got killed.
Well, we're done. Thank you.
Bye.
And there's another Pennsylvania district attorney case that is...
We're not really looking great on the East Coast here today.
Right, yeah.
Not doing any favors.
Rough start. Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. Ray Gricar was the DA of Center County, Pennsylvania. Had a reputation for being tough. On April 15th, 2005, he called his girlfriend, said he was driving in the countryside and would be back soon, which is apparently a thing people do. And he never returned. And that's pretty much all the cops have to go on. But then, so they found his car outside an antique store.
His laptop was found, right?
Yeah, so.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
We're both just sitting here waiting to figure out if we know the murder.
Right.
This guy, I think, killed himself.
So it seems like, all right, hold on. So everything but his cell phone was missing. There were no signs of a struggle. His credit cards and accounts were monitored. There were no signs of that. And then, yeah, his laptop was retrieved from a nearby river. And then eventually somebody like had the idea to look on his desktop computer at home. And the search history showed that he had made a bunch of web searches, the last web searches that were like how to wreck a hard drive, how to fry a hard drive, and water damage to a notebook computer. They weren't like that. Those were the exact searches. And the creepy thing is that the case he was working on at the time he disappeared was the Penn State sex abuse scandal. Mm. And he had actually let the football coach get off in 1998. Like, he didn't not...
Smart buddy.
Essentially, yeah.
I mean,
let him continue
literally,
to...
Literally, figuratively, no, legally.
Right. No.
Emotionally.
Literally. So, I don't know. Maybe he knew that shit was going to go wrong. But this is another case where they don't know if he got murdered or if it was a suicide or if he's, like, in Cuba somewhere.
Suicide. Next.
Suicide. Okay. Done. Let's burn through these babies.
That one's fascinating because the conspiracy, the possibility of conspiracy is so huge with that.
Right.
It's such a dirty situation, top to bottom. Anyone involved, like when you hear about all those, the people that knew that that was going on and didn't do anything about it. And for me, I just think down the line of like, could someone have murdered that guy because of it? Absolutely. Could he have killed himself because of the guilt he felt about that? Absolutely. Could he have had something on his computer that would have showed that he was complicit in that crime?
Right, right.
I mean, like, there's just so many ways you could go with something that is that. I mean, I feel like that blew a lot of people's minds open on the possibility of like sex abuse ring conspiracy theories that people would always be like, that's crazy.
Right.
And it's like, except for then when you actually have one totally publicly.
And then like everyone knows a little something and they don't realize how huge it is because nobody talks about it. So this, honestly, it sounds more like he fucking later days and like took off and is living in wherever the fuck.
Later days saints.
Yeah, later days saints. Because it seems like someone like that who is okay with a guy molesting children and tells him not to is a little too narcissistic to be like, oh, I fucked up. He's going to be like, I fucked up. I don't want anyone to like,
yeah.
And he goes out of there.
Yeah.
Dick.
Probably. Or maybe he was just like a big Penn State football fan.
Oh, God, he loves like, sports so
yeah.
much.
He's like,
he was
no,
blind.
This is going to ruin the Nittany Lions this year. All right, let's get to some actual murders. Although, Luna was probably a murder. Have you guys talked about the Girl Scout murders?
Yeah, well, we haven't because there's so many.
We've talked to each other
yes.
about it. And that was actually Ooh. What I was going to do last week. But Generation Y did an episode of it that was incredibly thorough.
Yes.
And I always get really... I don't ever want to repeat a great job someone else has done
yeah.
with me going, and then like kind of not knowing what I'm talking about all the time.
Yeah. So, Thinking Sideways did a great one too, where it's like, I don't need to do that.
Because those ones are so fascinating, I think, that people that have the time and the brain power to really dig in and do their research do such a great job on it.
Yeah.
They'll stop listening to us once they hear us talk about it when they could like they're like also listen to
well I won't overlap at all because I'll do just a really
let's
shitty job
do it
so
let's really fuck this up
yeah, let's really fuck this thing up. So in late April of 1977 someone broke into the counselor's tent at Camp Scott for Girl Scouts in Oklahoma and stole all the donuts from their donut box. I mean
whatever happens next is justified.
He replaced them with a creepy handwritten note, which made an ominous promise. Soon, three girls there would be murdered.
Fuck, I didn't know this part.
Yeah.
Yee.
The counselors brought the note to the director of the camp, who dismissed it as a morbid joke. There's always, like, some dumb asshole along the line who's just like, ah, you kids. 2 months later, a new camp was starting up. And there was a massive thunderstorm, and the new arrivals all huddled in their tents. There were, like, these tents all over the ground. One of the tents, the Kiowa unit, was a bit further from the counselor's tent than the others, and three 8- to 10-year-old occupants were never seen alive again after they went inside of it. The counselor found one of the victims in the forest near the camp showers. The two others were found still in the tent. So they found, like, a footprint that was like a size 9 shoe, and they said they had a fingerprint. And the cops immediately liked this guy, Gene Leroy Hart, because he had three names. And so they were like,
I don't need to hear anymore.
Yeah. And it's always the middle name, like Leroy or Wayne or...
Lee is a bad one, too.
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah,
don't want Lee.
That's my son's middle name.
I'm so sorry.
Change it.
Do we know, is it too soon to tell if your son is left-handed or not?
It is actually too soon, but we're hoping so. So this guy was actually on the run. It says he was at the house of a local medicine man, so I'm assuming he was a Native American fellow. And probably acquitted for a number of reasons. It turns out his foot was a lot bigger than the tennis shoe they found on the scene, or the tennis shoe print. And he had already been pinned for 308-year sentences worth of other assorted crimes. And then 1 year after landing in jail, he died of a heart attack at 36. But he left behind a note that said in no uncertain terms that he was innocent of the Girl Scout murders. So the thing you guys should know about when we write about murders, they never get solved. Usually
right.
We write about like really weird mysteries. Guys usually have like a resolution to yours.
No, I read those at late at night when you guys post those and then can't sleep all
night. Right, the better version of the story is the Girl Scouts solved it themselves and took this guy down.
That's right.
They got
and
the
then
badge.
They exacted revenge.
Yeah.
Right.
That'd
Nancy
be the good
Drew
one.
Style.
But really bums me out, and like another reason I won't do ones like that is like there's nothing, there's no like, it could be this guy or it could be this guy, and you're like, it's clearly that, like the couple who got shot with a shotgun on the beach in, is it Northern California?
Yeah, I think it was in San Francisco.
Like there's nothing, and it's such a fucking bummer.
Although they linked it to Israel Keyes, who was the guy that went around and randomly killed people.
That was amazing.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
That story was so fucking crazy.
And the craziest part was I didn't get to the end. Like, I basically got to well, essentially, the reason he got caught was the last girl he killed. That murder in and of itself would be an episode. And I just didn't have time to tell that whole story. Mm. And what I wanted to do was just go through all of the things that he had done. Because this is basically a guy, you guys probably know this already, but Israel Keyes was a guy who lived in Alaska. And he basically traveled around the United States randomly killing people and preparing to randomly kill people by going places and burying kill kits in the forest so that they had money, they had masking tape, they had zip ties, all this stuff that so if he ever got pulled over by a cop when he was driving around, there would be nothing about him that would be suspicious. And then he would go into the forest, unbury his kill kits, and then hang out like by a trailhead. And sometimes he would do things like if there was a group of people hiking, he would just pull the last person away so they would like truly just disappear because he was, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's
he
like
was,
horror movie shit.
He is super horror movie shit. Also, the Girl Scout thing to me is like, I don't understand why they haven't made that horror movie yet.
Right.
That is so insanely,
it's
every parent's fear. It's like such a crazy horror movie.
Yeah.
The thing I have a problem with is that the size 9 shoe print, like I think it was rainy or muddy that night, and they're going on that, and they're like, this guy who has fucking huge issues doesn't have a size 9 shoe, so let's let him go. And it's like, well, you don't know if they're related.
Yeah, there was a couple other reasons that they didn't like him for it. I think he might not have been in that area at that time, and he was also like a really good outdoorsman, and so it didn't seem like the sort of thing that he, or it didn't like fit his MO for like other crimes. I'm sounding as much like a cop as I can right now, talking about MOs and liking him for shit.
What year was the kill kit fella?
He was recent. I believe that he did it through the 2000s, maybe 90s, 2000s, and he got caught, I'm going to be wrong, but like from what I remember, like 2011, and killed himself within a couple days of being caught. So they don't, from what he was telling them, there's possibly like hundreds of unsolved murders across the country he could be responsible for, and he only told them the ones that they knew for sure he did.
This is an insane thing for me to pull out, but my brain is broken, and I do things like this. But when I hear about a guy who lived in Alaska, buried a bunch of kill kits, and traveled all around the country murdering people for years, Are kill kits free? What's his job? How is he affording any of this?
You're making that sweet money.
I don't understand. I'm still really, in student loan
debt.
Are
you planning this?
Eerily, no, I'm just like...
an eerily practical question from Dave.
I want to know how much what you do to get that disposable income for like different affairs for me.
Right. I'll tell you.
Not murder.
And also, what knots do you tie them up with?
Yeah. Right.
I will tell you, and it's the red flag job, as we all know, contractor. Contractors, they basically have reason to travel, and they're kind of handy, and they make good money. They can make good money and then just like kind of get out and leave and go somewhere else. They have months off of work.
Yeah. Because they make
It's kind of seasonal work depending, and traveling is very standard.
Shit, man.
Follow-up question, and read nothing into this, but like, have you priced kill kits recently? Is it a buyer's market, seller's market? What are we talking about?
Depends on how much cash you stash inside of them.
Yeah. Very little.
I've just caught you and you're under arrest. Yeah, I don't know, but I have to say one of my fantasies is to somehow stumble upon a kill kit buried in the forest. Could you imagine?
This is why I have fucking metal detector.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's do it.
That's the opposite of my fantasy, because I'm a nervous person by nature, and like I get really anxious whenever there's movies with like mistaken identity. So I know the second that I innocently stumble across a kill kit, someone's gonna walk up with a dead body and then point at me, and I'm like, I know this looks bad. I know this looks real bad. And that's the end of my life, and that'll be a bummer.
Here's the thing. Just don't sling the kill kit over your shoulder. It's like you've had it for a long time.
It looks so good, though. It's got like a leather.
No Country for Old Men, that movie killed me, because I was like, just take the cash and run. Like, who in here wouldn't go through the cash to make sure there's no fucking wire on it? Just take $1,000 and get out of there.
Take some of it, yeah. Take $2,000 and just coast. I don't know what a lot of money is. $2,000, retire, and then just fucking coast.
Also, didn't he go back to, like, save somebody's life or something?
Don't do that either. Don't be a hero, man.
Who here wouldn't have let that guy die? That actually brings me to a question Dan had. So Dan's a man, as you see.
I'm a boy.
A little boy. Would you say that you have more Murderina fans or Murderino fans?
I want to... couch this with
I'm doing the worst job.
This is a question I've run by a lot of people, because I don't know if it's sexist or not, and I'm really happy to learn that it is. And to qualify this with, I have no agenda or theory behind this. I have noticed in my own personal anecdotal flawed experience, more of my female friends are interested in serial killers and murder than my male friends, and I have no like. Aha! I'm not trying to trap anyone by like, yes, this stereotype that you've acknowledged in the world but have done no research in is true.
You can't trap us.
No. I wanted to know if you've noticed it in your own experience. I first came to your podcast not from Dad over here, because I don't listen to our podcast, but all of my close female friends were like, every single one of them recommended your podcast. And whenever I have someone who's a woman who's out of town and staying with me, they want to go to the Museum of Death. And like, I've got a lot of friends that I know who are strangers that was like, oh, Mickey, Elise, you guys can talk about serial killers because you're both interested in it. And it's not a thing I've observed with my male friends. And body language is telling me this is a bad question.
No, we're just ready to fucking answer it, because there's so many theories. We have so many theories.
I could keep asking it for like 30 minutes.
I just wanted a couple more qualifiers on it, just to make sure.
Well, I have never heard the term murderina until we were in the green room.
Oh.
Because it's not, are you female? I love these female comedians. It's not the same thing. Like, it's not, they're just comedians. And like, murderinos are just murderinos. You don't have to be a murderina. Doesn't give a shit.
Whatever. Who cares? I don't care.
Okay, go.
But I do think with our podcast, and I don't know, it might be different with like the guys that have different true crime podcasts. Who knows? But I think because it's George and I, and we are friends, and the way we are with each other, talking to each other about the thing we like, is part of the draw. I think that that's a big part of it. Not to say that guys don't like it, but I think women, there's something that is very familiar. And it's that kind of thing, like, I listen to podcasts because it's like I'm pretending like I'm hanging out with my friends. So you, when you get that feeling, it's the reason you go back more and more, because you're like, oh, I'm going to drive in the car by myself for 2 hours. I'm going to do it with my friends. Yeah. So it, I think it's more that. But also, maybe just the true crime is getting so popular now that more people feel free to be like, oh, Museum of Death or whatever.
It's also like, I think I have this anxiety of being murdered all the time where, like, I hate to be like this, but, like, women have 50% more fear that's, like, legitimate of being killed all the time than men do. And so we're more aware of it and we're more interested in it and we want to know more about it and we want to, like, study it because it's so much more realistic and true. Then there's that, like, Louis C.K. thing that's like, men are afraid of women because whatever, but women go on a date and they could be killed by the dude they're with. It's just like, it's a different fucking interest.
That was my friend's theory too.
Terrible.
You remember Elise from the previous hypothetical story? Elise was saying that,
is Elise real? Like,
yeah. Do we have a clip? Yeah.
There she is.
So she said that very early on, young girls are trained to, like, here's your survival guide because you're going to go out there and, like, be polite. But everyone is monsters. So this is the way that you... Here's the rule book on how to be a woman alone in public and all, like, the things that you need to look out for. And that sort of spirals into... You're just still staying educated on serial killers and how to spot and avoid them. I was born a straight white male, so my parents were like, there's the door. Go outside. Everything's yours. It's fine.
And enjoy.
So I have that rule book for me because... life is imperfect.
There's also, like, a difference between, like, Museum of Death. Like, I don't need to go there.
Sure.
And, like, I'll look at crime scene photos, but I'll be like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? You're fucking, like, this is insane. Like, so there's, like, the gruesome people, and then there's just, like, the people who read about it and want to know the stories and stuff. And I think, like, I wouldn't go to the Museum of Death. It's just, like, too much for me, but I want to read about it.
See, your friends are weird, Dan. Weird friends.
I think they're going to... everyone I know that has gone there, they're like, no, I couldn't. I didn't realize what it was.
Maybe it's also the thing of just that there's a wide scope. It's almost like opening up a whole new range of, like, the possibility of women, you know what I mean? Where it's like you wouldn't think that. I remember, and we just were asked about this in some question, and I wrote about it, when I very first checked out a book about Ted Bundy and got in trouble for it at my school and from my parents, and them saying a nice little girl shouldn't want to know about this, and the idea that it's like, okay, so it's fine if there's books about Frankenstein or vampires or something like that, that's all fine because it's fictional, but if I want to know about a real monster and how he pretended to have a broken arm so he would get someone to help him to lure them to his car, that's bad. The idea of that just really rung as bullshit to me, because it was just kind of like, but so I can be scared in the way that will never happen or ever apply to me, but this actually could happen. I mean, I didn't realize that at age 12, but I mean, it was that that overall feeling of, like, people hide taboo things or inappropriate things in society. We just are like, oh, that's not nice to talk about. And I think we're just coming into, like, a new age of, like, it happens all the time. I mean, there's been true crime stuff on TV for years and years. This isn't new, but it's almost that thing of, like, you can actually kind of go, I am interested in it, and not be like a creep or a goth or, you know, something like that.
I do think it's because I was real into murder as a kid as well. And I remember my parents kind of making it clear to me that that was creepy. And you don't want to be a creepy dude. So my theory heading in was the one you said, that, like, guys don't really have the luxury to just, like, ignore murder and be like, ah, what's entertaining about that? But I think women in general tend to, like, be more realists, and guys have the luxury to be more, like, idealistic and just head in the clouds because we're not dodging murderers.
We can all picture ourselves being the girl who would help a dude with a broken arm because we're all that person.
Right.
For some reason, we're not supposed to understand why we shouldn't do that. So we identify with the woman who was like, oh, okay, I'll help you. I don't want to be rude.
I don't
to this
want
to guy.
Be rude. Yeah.
And so we see that in ourselves when we read about it, and we see this woman who was going to college to be a lawyer, and she met this fucking terrible person, and it just, like, I think it hits us a little harder because we can identify with her so much.
Totally.
I, the only lessons my parents had for me growing up was like, all right, go out in the world, don't murder anyone. And I'm like, good note.
And like, have you?
Note. But before I go, how much are kill kits?
I haven't, because kill kits, it's such a seller's market right now.
Let's get into numbers. But you were talking about stories that aren't murder but that are creepy, and it just made me think one thing that is my favorite.
Favorite non-murder?
Yes, it's like insanely creepy, though. And I think other people have stories similar to this, but I had two friends who had an apartment. I think they were living in, like, we were in New York when it happened, at the Bell House, actually, and they were living right outside the city, so wherever, Connecticut or something, like drivable, I have no idea. But they had this apartment, and my one friend said that she just kept getting this weird feeling in this apartment. Like, she just would walk around and have an odd feeling, and she just couldn't drop it. And so finally her husband was like, look, let's put in some nanny cams. If you have this weird feeling, let's do it.
Yes.
Okay. Fuck. Yeah.
Now let's just sit in this for a second. We'll be right back. So they do it. They had gotten the nanny cam set up that day, and so we were backstage at the Bell House, and they were like, do you want to see some fucking crazy shit? It's not like crazy, except for just insanely creepy. Their downstairs neighbor, who I guess was like the building manager, was coming up into their apartment and just walking around. And they have it on video where she, and it's so creepy, and she's not even doing anything, but it's just like, she's very, very slowly walking through their apartment and just like looking at things. And then like, she doesn't fucking touch anything. It's like, she knows she can't touch anything. And she like walks up the stairs, walks into their loft bedroom. She's up there for like 5 minutes. And then she comes back down. And when she comes down the stairs, it's where the camera is directed toward. And we all were like around their phone looking. And she comes downstairs, we're all like, oh my God. But it's just some woman. It's just like woman that's weird with no boundaries, or who the fuck knows what she's going to do. But it was one of the creepiest things I've ever seen in my life.
That's fucked.
It's fucked.
So fucked up.
So what did they do?
And well, they called her and said, just so you know, we put a nanny cam in. And then they called the building owner and told them, and I think it was either like they were going to try to either move or get money or get her kicked out or something.
Shit.
I don't know.
This gets me in my head. Not to come to the defense of this woman who broke into a house and walked around. Like,
well, she
like
had
a
the key.
Creep show.
It was
so didn't break
so,
in.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
No defense needed. Sounds like
they were inviting her in by.
I'm trying
her
to they wonder how creepy and unexplainable my general behavior would look like if there were cameras everywhere.
Yes.
The amount of times that I've stood in my apartment holding one sock, staring at it, not knowing what the next step is, would really shock a lot of people.
It's so true, except for the key is you're in your apartment.
Yeah.
That's the crucial element.
What's creepy is your friend who was like, I feel a presence.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with her?
It was almost, she said it was like a thing, like a magazine would just be slightly turned.
Oh.
Or
wow.
It would be a thing that she was just conscious of that would be like...
Energy. Man.
I know. Yeah. Vibes. Total vibes.
Well, they say you can get secondhand anxiety, where it's like you can feel...
Someone just got it.
Someone just had anxiety. It was like a ripple. But you can get, like, if you can get... It's a thing. So maybe
clearly.
This chick, obviously. You know what I read about recently, speaking... I don't know if this is a murder or not, but Aunt Diane, like, what's wrong with Aunt Diane, or
oh,
whatever
yeah.
the fuck, where she, like, drives down the wrong way and kills everyone. I was reading the, like, what if it was this? What if it was that? You know? And one of them was like, well, what if she had eaten edibles and freaked the fuck out? Because we've all done that. right. And that to me was like made so much more sense than this chick chugging vodka. Like someone at the beach she was vacationing.
Oh, like
at.
They gave her edibles and she didn't know?
Or she didn't know how hard it would hit her. She ate like I ate a quarter of an edible and went to California Adventure and the Muppet 3D ride. They chased me. And like it was horrible. So like what if she just like tried it because she had a fucking tooth pain? And she lost her mind.
My friend came home to his dog, who he didn't realize had gotten their edibles. And it was like, as he comes home, and the dog doesn't immediately run to the door, which is the scariest, heartbreaking thing for any dog owner.
Aww.
And he was like, where are you, where are you? And he goes downstairs to the basement, and he sees the edibles unwrapped and clearly eaten. And a dog calmly staring at a wall, like, I'm freaking out, man. Something's different today.
The dog is Blair Witching in the corner.
Just in the corner.
That's scary.
The dog is fine now, by the way.
We derailed this. I'm so sorry. Come on.
No. Let's talk about edibles, man.
Yeah, man.
Fuck that.
I don't know the Aunt Diane story. So there's a woman who drove...
You said Aunt Diane, like, yeah.
It's bad.
We're dumb
it's
men bad. Who just have our heads in the cloud.
What?
Is it your Aunt Diane?
Not my Aunt Diane.
I'm
I don't
really
have
dumb
one.
Guy.
That's the name
real,
of the documentary.
It's a real sad... Remember the documentary Zachary? What's the one?
Dear Zachary.
Dear Zachary.
Oh,
it's like
Christ.
As heartbreaking as that, where like this mom and her husband went away for the weekend with their kids and like their nieces.
The story sounds good so far.
Sounds amazing.
No,
and
I
then, it's real ugly. And Aunt Diane drives all the kids home and then something fucking happens. And remember the driving the wrong way on the freeway
the
story,
highway.
Which I remember seeing that on the news and being like, what the fuck happened there?
And she killed all the
kids.
She
killed everyone, except for her kid, and she killed herself and everything. When everyone died, and they like, she was a secret alcoholic or something fucking happened, and she just lost her mind. And
did they test her and she was drunk?
Yeah, but her husband insists, and everyone is like, she didn't drink. Like, she didn't drink like that, but, you know, you can hide alcoholism pretty fucking well. I can't, but... Yeah.
I did.
A lot of people can. You did.
This is filled with grain alcohol.
Clearly. You're out of control.
Sorry.
Anyways...
Sad stuff.
So this one time at New Year's Eve, Michael Swaim's dog ate a pot brownie.
Yes.
And his dog is like a 6-ounce chihuahua. It was quite
a
treat for all of us. Everyone's fine.
Are they? Okay. Sorry.
So
go.
Should we give people an opportunity to do their hometown murders?
No.
Do we have any good hometown murders?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to line up at that microphone over there, and you can say your name and speak right
that's
on into
exciting.
It.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I feel like you're real excited. Let's hear it.
My name's Keo, and I'm from Buena Park, California.
And
In 2009, we saw in the news this lady was stuffed in a briefcase. No teeth, no hands. No head, no hands, so no teeth.
Tends to hurt the teeth.
The teeth by extension of the head.
We can't assume anything.
No.
Go ahead.
So that happened, and I found out 2 years later while binging on Wikipedia about those trashy VH1 I Love the Blah 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 shows. The murderer was actually a contestant on Megan Wants a Millionaire. That show is no longer running because of this, and he also was on I Love Money, which didn't air because of this murder. So met Jasmine Fior. His name's Ryan Jenkins, which is the worst last name. But Jenkins. But met her in Vegas.
Did you hear that, Jenkinses?
Any Jenkinses?
It's on.
Met her in Las Vegas, married after 2 days. He's a terrible person, beat her a couple times, and it was just a huge mess. And last place she was seen was San Diego, where she presumably was strangled and then chopped up. And then he drove 3 hours with the suitcase all the way around the corner of my house and just dropped it next to a dumpster. The only reason we know who she is because of her breast implants, which have...
That's right.
Yeah,
the serial number on that.
Yeah, okay.
Fuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, everyone get breast implants out here.
And this actually has an ending, though. And it's he dies, so it's not... Is it happy? Is it a happy ending?
No.
I'm not sure. No, okay. So goes back to Canada, because he's Canadian. Nowhere safe. Goes to Canada, ends up at a motel, and this tiny blonde woman checks in for him. They don't park in the parking lot. He parks by a trash can, stays in the car. Day later, she leaves, never comes back. She paid for 3 days. 3 days were up. The nephew of the owner walks in, and he hung himself in the closet or the back. It doesn't make a difference. But he's dead now. He hung himself, and that's the end of it.
Around the corner from your house
was the
dumpster?
Was the dumpster.
And sorry,
who was the tiny blonde lady?
We don't know.
Elise.
She never came
back?
Oh, okay.
She's a murderina.
Tiny accomplice.
Just when you first said it, you said she was in a briefcase, but was she in a suitcase?
Suitcase, my bad.
A suitcase. No,
is there a difference?
Because that's real tight.
A briefcase is very small.
Okay,
I was just like, holy shit.
It was a suitcase specifically from Walmart.
Right. Got it.
A clutch, I believe.
That's amazing. What was your name?
Terrifying. Keo.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
man. That was
awesome. Horrifying. I remember that one because he was one of those people, he had insanely overplucked eyebrows.
Ooh, that is a sign right
it
there.
It certainly is.
Look at your outfit. It's cute. So I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm going to do my home country murder because I'm Costa Rican, and we've only had 2 recorded serial killers in history.
Whoa.
And so we're talking.
Way to go, Costa Rica. What's your name, by the way?
I'm Marlo.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Marlo. So.
Got a lot of
are you one of
yours.
The serial killers?
Yeah.
You have fans.
No, so I'm going to talk about a guy called El Psicopitaca, which means the psychopath. The first serial killer in Costa Rican history. The second one was caught in 2013, but this guy just kind of dropped off the face of the earth. Mm. And it starts in like the late 80s. This is a really, really sad story. I know it's not going to be a happy story, but okay, so.
They're all kind of like that.
Let's all.
Yeah, it's all right.
So the chihuahua was named Tiggy, and it is a hot brownie.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was like,
so let's all go to Costa Rica. Everyone is really, really Catholic. So it starts off with this woman. She's in her mid-30s. So she's walking with her and her 6 daughters and nieces. There's about 3 of each. So they're walking from her hometown to the main center to go thank God and go to like the main cathedral. They don't make it. Their bodies are found all lined up on the side of the road. Oh. The oldest daughter is about 16. The youngest niece is about 5.
Fuck.
3 are in their teens. The mother and the 3 teens are all found sexually assaulted. And the youngest, luckily, if you can say that, are untouched, and they've all been shot in the head. They've been shot with such precision that they think it's a military action, which Costa Rica does not have a military. So they're looking at Nicaraguan Contras, who are starting their own rebellion. They're in the middle of a civil war, so one gets over the border. And so that's where it starts. This continues until the early 90s. From there, it goes into mostly sex workers. But it's all people in the middle of actually having sex. Not with the perpetrator, but there's men and women, but they're all in the middle of some sort of sexual action. And the last one, there's a woman and a man having sex, and he shoots them through a window. He's like, from the angle, they're like, he was in the tree. And it just, like, abruptly ended in, like, 1993. They never found him. The bodies they found along the way, the first ones weren't really touched other than the sexual assault while they were alive, but there was genital and mutilation in other places as well. And so then he just drops off the face of the earth. And people assumed he died, and then there was one that started in, like, 2008-ish, and they thought it was the same guy, but he was caught, and he was like a super young dude in his 20s, so those are the only 2 people who I've ever serial killed in the country.
Do they know that they were all connected? How did they know that? Like, it could have been a bunch of...
Yeah, so there was, like, the caliber and the kind of precision was about the same.
Wow. So, that's amazing.
Thank you.
I mean, awful. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I like their pronunciation of the psychopath better than ours.
Yeah.
I think it's slightly cooler.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea.
No, yeah, go ahead. Military.
My friend who I grew up with, I used to like play a lot of Risk with him. His name is Wolf. He's really, really, really smart. Like, he went to MIT. He scored like a perfect on his SAT, his PS. He's like crushed math. Like, he was doing like senior year of math, like freshman year. Like, he's probably a rocket scientist if he hears this. Like. So while he was at MIT, throughout high school, he never really like had a girlfriend. He was just kind of like, I'm like a
lone wolf.
Like, lone wolf, dude. You said it. Okay, so he's at MIT for whatever, being really, really, really smart, and he finds a girlfriend there. And at some point in time, he's like, I'm kind of an awkward dude. Like, I don't know. So he has to like figure out how to break up with this girl. And somehow he's like, I'm gonna break up with you. And she's like, okay. And then she orders a crossbow. But she couldn't wait for it to get there. So she took 9 knives and went to his dorm room, where the doorman had seen her before and was like, oh yeah, I'll let you in. And she was like, thank you. And just like went in there and hung out in his closet in his room until he was asleep. And then climbed out of his closet, climbed on top of him, and stabbed him like with like multiple knives multiple times in the teens. Like he got stab wounds, and then somehow he like was like, get off of me, and he went outside and called 911 and held his jugular vein.
Oh my god.
Until the medics came and saved him, and he's totally fine.
Yeah. You apply
also,
pressure.
You guys are awesome. We love your show.
Did they ever work it out, or did they get that before? I was waiting for.
Yeah, what's her deal?
Calling out, demanding answers, pleading skies, cry for hours, dropping peace bombs, collecting prayers.
All right, that was a fun one. This is I Have Been to the Mountain by Kevin Morby off his album The Singing Saw. These lyrics always felt like kind of Nick Cave-ish, sort of creepy meditation by someone who has killed or is getting ready to. And then I found out it's about Eric Gardner's death a few minutes before recording this. So it's a protest song, which was also a murder, I guess, so I'm going to leave it. Sorry to talk about Eric Gardner's death so cheerfully. Anyways, I hope you enjoy the song, which is just a really cool song and well-written, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. On to a couple quick footnotes. We're going to link off to the My Favorite Murder homepage on Feral Audio. We will link off to Murderpedia, the story of the thrill killer who stalked Daniel's hometown, as well as Robert Zarinsky's Murderpedia page, the other killer that Daniel linked off to. We'll link off to the Netflix documentary Amanda Knox. We'll link off to a New York Times article about the Letterman stalker. We'll link off to a Washington Post article about Jonathan Luna's death still being a mystery, and a CNN article about Ray Gricar, the missing pedophile prosecutor. We'll link off to Gloyd McCoy, Tent Number 8, which is a book about the Girl Scout murders. We'll link off to the Murderpedia page of Israel Keyes, the HBO documentary There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane, which I have not dared watch because it sounds like a real bummer. We'll link off to the ABC News page about the murder of Jasmine Fiore by Ryan Jenkins, and to the Today Costa Rica page about the serial killer El Psicopata. My Spanish pronunciation is unparalleled, you guys. And we'll link off to the Cracked article, The Most Terrifying Serial Killers You've Never Heard Of, which contained, I think, both of the stories I told in the intro. And that was written by E. Reed Ross and Ivan Farkas. Thanks for the intro material, fellas. Anyways, thanks to Georgia and Karen for coming on our live show. It was so much fun. I'm a huge fan of those guys, and their show is amazing. If you aren't one of the 95% of our fans who started listening to it after their first appearance, I highly recommend you do so. And thanks to Daniel O'Brien for coming on and being hilarious as always. And finally, thanks to engineer Brett, who you can follow at Brett, R-A-D-E-R, on Twitter. You can follow me at Jack_OBRIEN. Some of you have been asking me if I'm ever going to do guest appearances on other people's podcasts. And yeah, I'll probably talk about it there when I do. So if you want to find out about those, follow me on Twitter, and that'll do it. We'll be back next week with more podcasts. I will talk to you guys then. That man lived in this town. Tell that a pig took him down. And have you heard the sound of a man start breathing?
Gilbert Gottfried here, reminding you that Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast is now on Earwolf. See, Earwolf, I don't really know about. Now, werewolves, that I know. If you told me we were going to be on a podcast network run by Maria Uspenskaya and Lon Chaney Jr., then I could get excited. Every week, my co-host Frank Santopadre and I take a fun look back at the movies, music, and TV shows we love and the performers we grew up watching. People like Dick Van Dyke, Adam West, Bruce Stern, Rich Little, Chevy Chase, Dick Cavett, and Mickey Dolenz, just to name a few. So check out the show Vanity Fair and LA Times called Gripping and Poignant, and actor John Amos called The Place Where Celebrities Go to Die. Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, right here on our new home, Earwolf.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.